offers full-time benefits, including health and retirement, while serving an important role in our community, Auburn City Schools is actively seeking additional bus drivers. You must have a clean driving record, and all training is provided, including CDL certification. For more information, please go to auburnschools.org or call 334-887-2100. Once again, if you're interested in becoming a bus driver for Auburn City Schools, visit auburnschools.org.
Michael here from University Ace Hardware. Since we opened in 2013, we've faithfully served the Auburn Opelika community. Our number one priority is always our customers. We want a visit to Ace to be like a visit to your neighbor. Come visit us now and check out our brand new selection of knives, the largest in the local area. With several different brands and styles, there's something for everyone. So come see why we've been voted a neighborhood favorite 3 years in a row now at University Ace Hardware, next to the movie theaters in Auburn.
Don't back up what I'm saying. But last night's case anyway, but I still don't think Auburn looked good doing what they did. I know they won the game, okay? I know they won the game. They pushed. They did not cover, apparently, according to you. But Auburn
the
got the victory.
The ended at 14.
Okay, well, I thought it was 13.5. They won by 14, but if it got to 14 to tip off, then that's what it is. But
I was leaving the game with about a minute left, 30 seconds left, and I was catching
boo.
No, I stayed in the arena until the buzzer went off, right? Okay, but I was in the upper deck, and I was like, I'm not getting caught up in this mass of humanity. So I'm walking down, and there's a student in standing room who is losing his mind as Auburn is dribbling it out with 14. As the score, he is losing his mind.
I wonder what he had.
Exactly. Go ahead.
But no, Auburn gets the win 94-80. And look, man, Jabari Smith, thank God, he finally realized if he just shoots the basketball, it's going to go in more times than not for this dude. He's too good of a shooter and too good of a basketball player to not shoot the basketball. And the dude popped off. Jabari Smith had 31 points last night. And Walker Kessler, he went off as well. They scored, almost half our points, if not more?
Walker's was a quiet 21.
It was a quiet 21.
I looked up
21.
And I was like, he's got 21 points? What?
Yeah, his was quiet, but Jabari, 10 of 16.
Loud.
7 of 10 from the three-point line. 4 of 7 from the free throw line. That's kind of odd for him. I feel like he rushes his free throws, and he rushes his shot at times, too. Because I've always said, if he sets his feet and just shoots the basketball, and this could be true for most players, but Jabari Smith especially, he's such a good shooter. If he sets his feet, steps in, and just shoots the ball, it's going in every single time. So 4 of 7 from the free throw line was kind of shocking, but everything else was clicking for him. 31 points. And then, like you said, Walker Kessler with a quiet 22 points, but 8 of 10 from the field, 6 of 7 from the free throw line, 7 boards, 7 blocks. I mean, that's all you can ask for from your front court from Auburn. But no, I still think this team can play and look better than what they did. I think playing Vanderbilt helped them a little bit look better, but I'm not hating, okay? I love Auburn doing what they're doing, putting up 94 points on an SEC team, winning by 14, but I still think they can play better.
I hope last night was the team breaking out of their shooting slump, which I said we need to see the Florida game on Saturday before we know that for sure, because it's been road games where Auburn has struggled. Auburn winning in double digits, that's been the fashion that they've been doing at home, regardless of how they play. But to counter your point about how you feel like Auburn didn't play a great game last night, you take the first 5 minutes out of the game, which was spurred on by Bruce Pearl technical foul. You take that out of the equation. Auburn outscored Vanderbilt outside of the first 5 minutes. When Auburn got down 14-3, Auburn outscores Vanderbilt 91-66 by 25 over the rest of the game. Outside of the first 5 minutes of the game, which they just kind of hit you in the mouth early. I don't think Auburn was super locked in. They were missing some easy shots. Bruce gets a technical. That helps Vanderbilt a little bit because they got 4 free throws in a row on one possession. That spurred it on a bit. And then Auburn comes out of the first media timeout, and everything is right back to normal, and Auburn outscores them. Like I said, 91-66 over the rest of the ball game. I thought Auburn played a great game outside of those first 5 minutes.
And that's impressive. I mean, that's impressive against any SEC opponent because we know how good the SEC is and how deep this league is. But let me say this. I'm not one to come out and bash referees, but on both sides of the basketball last night, both sides of the floor, both teams, I mean, the officiating was just so inconsistent. Not that it was, bad, I guess. But the first 5 minutes, Bruce gets a tech. Like, and then it was just back and forth.
Did you hear Bruce Pearl from the sideline?
No, what'd he say? I saw him. I didn't hear what he said. I mean, probably can't say it on the air, but.
I just don't want to be wrong, but I think I heard, I'm tired of this, because he got loud. He definitely was yelling from the sideline. Now, was it a little quick to give a technical? Sure, but it was something along the lines of, I'm sick and tired of this.
Fair enough. But still at the same time, 5 minutes into the basketball game, and then just the...
Ref set the tone.
The ticky-tack fouls here and there, but then they'd let them go and play for 4 or 5 minutes.
I think that's part of a trend in college basketball. You're talking about ticky-tack fouls. I think that's part of a trend in college basketball where they're trying to clamp back down on the game. This year has been a more physical brand of basketball, I think, than we're accustomed to. I believe I read something earlier today on Twitter where Jay Billis said that college basketball as a whole is down in terms of its foul numbers being called. Last night, in the last couple of games, that has not been the case, but I would not be shocked if they are going to begin to call the games closer and tighter to the vest as the season proceeds. Last night inconsistent? 100%. I thought last night there were some ridiculous calls, but also Auburn's going to have to adjust how they defend, because let's be real, Jabari got a call go against him where he put his hands on a guy after they got a rebound trying to go and reach in. By the book, that's a foul. I don't care if you barely touched him. If the other guy got the rebound clean and you don't touch the ball and you go and slap your hands on him, even if it was light, that's a foul. You're not allowed to do that.
Yeah, my thing is, I want the refs to be consistent.
Sure.
And I'm not saying it was just all ton of bad calls against Auburn. They had some bad calls for Vanderbilt as well. And I just want, I know it's hard. I get it. There's a human aspect to it, but that's your job. You know what I'm saying? There's three of them out there. The biggest thing to me, Noah, was there was one play, and I believe it was in the second half, and it was on my end of the floor. I was there last night. And they made a call. One of the refs blew the whistle. The ball went out of bounds underneath the basket, right? The ref blew the whistle.
And three of them looked at each other and they said, where's the ball?
Yes, all three of them.
I said at that moment out loud, I said, there are six eyeballs on the floor and not one of them could locate the basketball. What are you doing?
Yes.
I did say that. You're right.
All three of them looked at the other one with their hands in the air and they said, what's the call? Nobody knew. I was like, dude, are you serious? I'm like, bro, that is as bad as it gets if you're asking me when it comes to refereeing and officiating basketball. Like you said, there are six eyeballs. One of them had to catch who touched the basketball last. But yeah, all three of them looked at the other one with their hand in the air, and they were like, I don't know. What was the call? Who touched it? I couldn't believe it. And then in the first half, with 9 minutes to go, both teams were approaching the double bonus already. Like, that's crazy. Both teams were already in the bonus, and they were approaching the double bonus by the 9 minute mark in the first half. That's too many fouls, man. That many fouls were not occurring.
Another point that I want to make about why I think Auburn played well last night, and the statistics, the team stats can be a little deceiving, because you and I were talking off air about turnovers, and Auburn had 17 turnovers. Alan Flanagan accounted for 6 of those. And he didn't have, let's see, he had 1 assist. So he had 1 assist to 6 turnovers. Take that out of the equation, Auburn has 19 total assists last night to just 11 turnovers.
That's what you want.
That's almost 2-1, like you want. You talk about Wendell Green, he had 9 assists coming off the bench to just 2 turnovers.
That's amazing.
Zach Jasper barely recorded a stat. He only had 1 steal, didn't take a shot, didn't record another stat other than fouls. KD Johnson had 3 assists to 2 turnovers, not exactly where you want to be at. Jabari Smith had 3 assists to 2 turnovers, and Walker Kessler had 1 assist to the 1 turnover. And, of course, there were some other guys who accounted for some assists throughout the game, but I'm not going to go through everybody who recorded a statistic. But, once again, going back to it, if you took Alan Flanagan's performance out of the stat sheet last night, Auburn has 19 assists to 11 turnovers, 19 assists on 31 made buckets, 20 assists in this case, because we're not taking Alan Flanagan's 1 assist out of it. Auburn had 20 total assists last night on 31 made buckets. That jumps out to me. On a night where Auburn had 17 turnovers, they still had 20 assists. I thought Auburn played well, moved the basketball around. They knocked their shots down, shot 58.5% from the field, 50% from three, 81% from the free throw line. Additionally, they shot like 71% in the second half. They rebounded fairly well, I thought. Break down the rebound discrepancy here. 33-26, Auburn wins in that category. Not a whole lot of second chance points for Auburn last night. Only had 6 offensive rebounds. Didn't get a whole lot of second chance points off of that, but they also forced Vanderbilt on the defensive side of the ball to 16 turnovers, so they were able to get out and run a few times. I thought Auburn played about as complete a basketball game as you could outside of the first 5 minutes, and I don't want people to think I'm ragging on this, but you just look at the box score outside of Alan Flanagan in the first 5 minutes, Auburn played one of their best games of basketball that we can remember.
And here's what I'll say about that. We talked about yesterday, and I asked you the question during our Q&A, what are you looking for besides the victory for Auburn in the game last night? And you asked me the same thing. And I said I wanted to see efficient half-court offense for Auburn because that's not something we have seen really all year, despite a couple of games. And Auburn did better last night. They really did. They were moving the basketball around. People were actually moving without the basketball. That's the biggest thing on offense is when you watch somebody dribble the basketball and the other 4 guys are just standing there watching him, they're not going to do anything. But Auburn was moving without the basketball, making the right passes. KD Johnson actually passed the ball a few times, which is normally not the case. You know, he's normally, when he starts dribbling and starts crossing over between his legs, he's going to shoot or he's going to drive, and he normally doesn't pass.
He had a great pocket pass to Devin Cambridge last night on the block. And Cambridge didn't even know it was coming. You know why? Because KD Johnson never passes. And he caught it. Luckily, he didn't drop it. He almost dropped it, but you know exactly what play I'm talking about. Yep. The nice over-the-shoulder wraparound pass, dropped it into the breadbasket. Cambridge recovered, went up, easy layup.
That's efficient offense. That's how it works. Move the ball from one side of the floor to the other. Auburn has gotten stuck in some games where they get the ball to one side of the floor and they just pass it back and forth on the same side. You got to move the basketball because here's how I always say it. When the ball is moving, the defense is moving. And when the defense is moving, that's where you find holes, you find lanes, you come in for back cuts and screens and all that. So move the basketball, which moves the defense, which gets you better looks on offense. That's just how it works. And Auburn did a very good job of that last night. And then when you look at the guard play, that's where I always make the comparison of a good, efficient guard has 2 assists to 1 turnover. A Wendell Green, he is our point guard. I know Zeb Jasper starts, and Zeb's still coming back from illness, but Wendell Green, 9 assists to 2 turnovers. I mean, that's unbelievable. That's perfect. That is more than perfect from a point guard. And then he had 12 points, and that's just off the bench. And he didn't shoot the ball well. He only shot 3 of 10, which is not good for him. And then you have Alan Flanagan, which is I don't know how to word this, but I don't want to say he's a liability, but he's not helping this basketball team right now, in my opinion, because last night, we already went over this. He had 2 points, he had 1 board, 1 assist, 6 turnovers, and 4 fouls. So what is he doing? And his 2 points were on an oop. They were on an alley-oop, on an alley-oop dunk. Do you remember that from the baseline?
I do, yeah.
That were his 2 points. That was it. So here's my question to you. What is Alan Flanagan doing to benefit this Auburn team, especially as a starter? Because if you ask me, I can't give you an answer because I don't know.
See, we say that, but he had a great game this past weekend. He had his best game of the year last time out, right? So we say that, and it's easy to bring those things up. But last time out, this past weekend, I thought he had a fine game. It looked great out there. Got into double digits, was efficient. I think for Flanagan, right now, he's trying to find his place. He's trying to find, and you would think that he would have already found his role with this team with how long he's been playing, because he's been playing, what, since the Murray State game? Mm-hmm. I think it's been that long. And so he's had the benefit of 13 games in SEC play and then a couple of non-conference games, 2 at the end of non-conference play. And granted, those first 4 or 5 games that he got out there, those are kind of a wash, right, because you're still trying to get more comfortable with your body. You're trying to get back into game shape. But by now, those aren't questions anymore. You should be in game shape. You should be comfortable. Right now, it just looks like he's forcing it at times. And Alan Flanagan is a ball-dominant player. But on this team, with the guys that he's out there with, you don't want him running the point because you want Wendell Green Jr. or Zeb Jasper doing that, right? At shooting guard, you got KD Johnson, who's been much the better attacking and slashing option, getting to the rim and finishing through contact and whatnot. Definitely the better ball handler when he's attacking the rim than Alan Flanagan. And then you've got the front court that accounted for 53 points last night of Auburn's 94-point performance. Those are the two guys that you want touching the basketball on every possession in some way because good things happen. Those are your two primary scoring threats. Those are your two primary scoring options. And so when you look at it, you've got a ball-dominant player right now in Al Flanagan that is the fifth best scoring option right now pretty much in any lineup that Auburn puts on the floor, aside if Dylan Cardwell's out there, because Dylan Cardwell can't create his own shot. But Dylan Cardwell can get boards, get second-chance opportunities. You could throw him a lob. He could do different things like that.
Cardwell had a better game last night than Flanagan. 4 points and three boards.
Well, Cardwell knows his role. Cardwell fits.
Exactly.
Al Flanagan is a ball-dominant player and needs the basketball in his hands. And that's not going to happen this year.
The time for him to figure that out is been here and gone. Like, it is coming to the end of February, he has got to figure out his role on this basketball team, because right now I think he's hurting us, or he's hurting Auburn more than he's helping Auburn, in my opinion, Alan Flanagan. Let's head to the phone lines, 334-321-1390, or toll-free at 888-382-7502. Greg, on the line, welcome in.
Hey, guys. I think you hit the nail on the head. One thing with Flanagan is he's just not found his permanent role right now because of the other guys around him. He can't get into a flow, and you all know that basketball is a game of flow, and he just doesn't seem to be getting into it, or at least last night we definitely wasn't even close. Now, I got an assignment for y'all since y'all got more time than I do to check on this. What I see out of Auburn, and you talked about it, about, you know, moving the ball and guys moving without the ball. What I see is if we could get three touches and touch the paint, what is our scoring percentage compared to the times when we come down and it's a one-pass shot or it's a couple of passes and doesn't even come near the paint and we shoot? Because what I see out of it, when we touch that paint and we move that ball at least three touches, we're probably scoring, I would say, on about a 70% clip or better.
I am interested to know that, and I don't know if that information is readily available out there. I may have to just go back and watch the game because I've got to record it. I've got YouTube TV, so I go back and watch any game. I just have to chart it out, which would be a long venture. But you're right. I would imagine you are correct on, you know, any team, any coach would say they're going to shoot the basketball better when you get a paint touch with a guy like Walker Kessler. And last night when Vanderbilt got into zone and you found Walker Kessler or Jabari Smith in the middle of the floor, there were kickout options or they drove to the bucket. I'm with you. Auburn played well last night. The 20 assists tell you that.
You know, last thing, and you're talking about the officiating. Sadly, it seems to be getting worse here toward the end of the season. So it may get interesting. Who knows, you know. Sometimes, like I think I said it a couple of weeks ago when I called in, it gets old seeing them feel sorry for guys like Kessler's blocking balls and they call fouls. But
right,
you're seeing that more and more. And I think that's what got Jasper last night. He got in the foul trouble early, and it just kind of took him out of what his game is, because his game starts with defense and moves with the rest of it. So,
Greg, we appreciate the call, my man. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks.
I agree with him, and that's why I think – the trend in college basketball right now, and you can kind of see it not just in Auburn games, but I think you could see it around the league and around the country. Foul calls were at a low this year, according to Jay Billis. They may be about to tighten it up at the end of the year.
And I think,
especially as the field of teams playing shrinks, yeah, and there are more supervisors out there, right? It's easier to pay attention to less games.
And I think officiating just across sports in general has just gone down in the last few years because, and this is a pretty national hot take, that officials and referees are not really held accountable for
making
bad.
How do you do that, though?
I don't know. That's a great
question. Do you
make
them have a press conference like coaches do and players do? Do you make them get in front of the media? Is that a trail that you want to go down?
There's got to be something, though, because they just walk into an arena or a football field, make whatever call they want or what they feel, and then they walk away.
So we say that, and I'm just playing devil's advocate with you because I do agree that accountability with officials and the repeated blowing of calls, I've said that's a problem. It's a epidemic right now in sports at all levels, but it's very difficult to get officials at the high school level, right? It's extremely difficult. And I know you're talking about the collegiate and professional levels where there's a lot more money involved for those guys. But should we be making it more difficult on officials when it is extremely difficult to get guys that are qualified to do the job?
But if you take being an official out of it, it's just a job. And every other job in the world, you have to be accountable for your decisions and your actions within that job, right? So they have an extremely difficult job. It's not something I would want to do. And I respect them for going down that field and wanting to take that job. But every other job in the world has accountability. Whatever you do, whether it's right or wrong, that's on you. And I think there's got to be some review process or some maybe not defending of a call, but some explanations on some calls over a month span or in a game or something like that to where they get held accountable, because I do think that it needs to be done. Let's take a break here on the line.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. We got about 4 minutes till we go to our network break. But kind of a question that I'm going to probe the public with here before we get to on-the-line Q&A at 2:30. This is what we want your thoughts on, or anything else out there, of course. But this is a specific question if you want to call in about it. How would you affix officiating in collegiate sports, professional sports? Everybody says we've got to hold officials accountable. What does that mean to you? How would you do it? And that's what we were talking about in our previous segment. And I'm playing a little devil's advocate with you, because officiating is a hard job, and I think there should be grace given to officials. And there isn't a whole lot of grace given to officials from the public. Let's be honest. There's not. And it's a hard job. Let's see you get out there and do it, right?
Right.
It's a very difficult job. But I am with you. They are covering games. They are officiating games at an extremely high level where people's jobs are at stake, where careers are at stake. It's high-stake moments, right? You can't have Virginia double dribbles. You can't have Rams Saints in the NFC Championship. You can't have massive botched calls. You can't have perfect games ruined, right? You can't have that stuff happen because of a massive blunder. And I think that is where replay can help the job be done more effectively. But replay is so scrutinized now. There's so much scrutiny when they go to the monitor. They take so long. And they say, well, we're trying to make it efficient in a sped-up process. It's like, no, you're picking it apart too much. Mm-hmm. Is it obvious or not? If it's not, move on.
I liked how the very short-lived, was it AAF, that football conference, alliance, whatever you want to call it, they had it, you remember, where when there was a review, they took you inside the referee booth, inside the review booth, and you could hear them talking about what they were discussing, and they broke it apart in like 30 seconds, did it, and bam, it was over. I like that part of it. That's just one small piece to it, but I still think that refs need to be held accountable. And I agree with what you're saying about they get the most scrutiny from the public, obviously, but
they're hated.
They're hated.
The modern day tax collector.
They know it. And they know that. But you can't tell me that being a human official, humans have a human aspect within their brain and their body, whatever, they react to what's going on around them. So they react to the crowds, they react to coaches, they react to players, and you can't tell me that that doesn't affect...
Subconscious bias.
Subconscious bias, you can't tell me that doesn't affect how they call games at times. And that can't happen. I don't know how you fix that. And of course, that kind of brings into the baseball part of, you know, electronic umpires and that type of thing, which I'm for, by the way. Like an electronic strike zone, I think that's legit. It's hated because it's different. That's why.
No, I just like humans doing jobs.
But see, now that just goes against what we've been talking about. That's the same thing. Because that's officiating.
I'm also in favor of giving referees grace, unless it is a...
But within the industry?
You can't make massive blunders, but everybody getting angry about some of the ticky-tack fouls last night. I'm going to be real. There was four or five fouls last night where everybody was like, And I was like, no, that was a foul.
There was a couple times I did that.
That was a foul. Both of the goaltending calls, everybody was like, yeah! I was like, that's goaltending. By the book, that is goaltending. That was a mental lapse on Devin Cambridge and Dylan Cardwell's part where they swatted that ball away. That is a live ball in that moment.
I agree.
I think there should be some grace in those moments, and it gets blown way out of proportion.
But I think within the industry, referees do have grace because who holds them accountable? The fans are the only ones. If coaches or players say anything, they get fined. They can't do anything about it. They have plenty of grace. Let's just be honest.
On the other side of this, right, we're going to do On the Line Q&A. We'll be back with more of On the Line. Minutes into the Thursday edition of On the Line. Noah Gardner, Jacob Goins with you. Just had a lengthy discussion about officiating. Everybody says they want to keep them accountable. What does that even mean? We want to hear from you about it. 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. How do you feel about officiating right now? I know that's a loaded question. If you don't want to talk about the refs, I'm with you, man. I think refs are blown way out of proportion. Of course, there's the massive blunders that we see. And it does feel like that happens all too often. So I get what you're saying. Maybe they do get too much grace. Like, I understand what you're saying there. Nothing's going to happen to them, so there already is grace baked in. And I don't think that there probably is anything else that leagues can do because you're going to run off officials. And it's already hard enough to get officials, right? Of course, somebody will want to do it for money. And I think the NFL... in large part,
those guys make money, man.
And I think they do a fine job. And I think NBA refs do a fine job on average.
NBA refs' job is easy now. They just let them play.
But you look at the massive moments, and people are going to disagree with me because their team was wronged and they're super emotional about it. I get it. But there are massive blunders that have been made. Those can't happen. You can't have Rams Saints in the NFC Championship. How that didn't get called, I have no idea. I don't know how you watched that. And you're like, yeah, man, that was okay. That can't happen. Virginia double dribbling, that can't happen.
Can't happen.
That can't happen. In the Final Four, these were not just regular season games either. Like, sorry, bud, get it next time. No, these were season-ending, championship-defining moments. Can't make those mistakes. A perfect game was ruined once. And I know that guy feels awful because he has gone on the record and says he feels awful and he's apologized. So I don't want to bring that up because I feel really bad for that umpire because he knows he made a mistake and he's owned up to it, right? So I respect that, right? But we've had perfect games ruined. We've had championship seasons derailed from this nonsense. And stuff like the Rams-Saints in... whenever that was, 2018, 2019, whenever that happened. Stuff like that has happened since, guys.
I know. That's why we bring this up, because it's such a big deal. And it's a
But you can't bring it up after Auburn-Vanderbilt. That's the problem. We can't talk about last night's officiating and then try and put that on the same level as these massive blunders. I don't think the two are linked. You are always going to have stuff that happened last night because that's the human aspect of officiating. What I'm saying needs to be fixed is I understand that they're going to make mistakes and sometimes they're going to have an off night, just like Jabari Smith had a shooting slump for three games in a row. That's going to happen. But we can't blow that out of proportion to the point where we've got to have officials right all the time and they've always got to be consistent, things like that. What I'm saying is, let's fix the things that we can fix. The obvious mistakes that are made, that's the stuff that needs to be corrected and cannot happen on the game's biggest stage.
But those types of calls happen in games like last night, and that's where it starts. Auburn-Vanderbilt last night, in hindsight, that game does not matter. It has no implications. You know what I'm saying? But it starts in a game like that, which leads to...
I didn't see anything dramatic happen last night, like a Rams Saints or a Virginia double dribble.
Well, there wasn't like one dramatic game-changing championship-ending call, but I just think the officiating on both sides. I'm not, you know, complaining because Auburn got crappy calls or Vanderbilt got crappy calls, whatever.
It was pretty evenly called. 26 fouls on Auburn, 23 on Vanderbilt.
But that's a lot, man, and that's just not. There's not that many fouls. I think there was just multiple times during that game. I'm like, why are we calling this? You know what I mean? But like. If you're going to call it that way, that's fine.
So your problem is what's written in the book. I think they called the game last night by the book.
Hmm.
Auburn is handsy. Let's call it what it is.
Auburn fouls
more than any other team in this league. They are in that top tier in terms of fouling in the SEC.
But then at the same,
Auburn is handsy. You don't need to go and karate chop someone every time you want the basketball, KD Johnson.
Yeah, Zeb
Let's
Jasper.
Just be real.
Those guys are extremely handsy. The guards are on defense, but
can't armbar, dude.
But the refs, like the first 5 minutes, they caught everything in the book. And then the next 5 or 10 minutes, they just put their whistles in their pocket. And then the next 5 minutes, they put the whistle back in their mouth and they blew it just because they could. You know, like the inconsistency and just picking and choosing what you like.
There's managing a flow.
Yes. And it's hard to do. I get that. I get it, but I don't understand it because I've never been an official. But there's just a lot to attack on that subject. I'm glad we brought it up, though, because it is important to talk about and it doesn't get brought up enough to an actual discussion unless people are just really mad, you know?
And so that's where I'm getting at is I look at a game like last night, and Auburn fans have talked about this recently on social media and seeing how many times fouls are being called, and I do think sometimes unfair things does happen to this Auburn basketball team because of how good they are. Like Walker Kessler's an instance where you typically think that's going to be a foul. There's no humanly way that somebody blocked that shot. But when someone's 7'1", has his wingspan, has his ability, something that may appear most times like it's a foul, in those cases, it's actually a clean block, right? But I just don't want to see people get so wrapped up with all this that they blow the little things out of proportion when the things that can be fixed, the things that can be more easily controlled, is not goofing on the big stage, not goofing on the obvious things. It's hard to call a foul in basketball. It's hard to get those things right, I think. And I may be wrong, and if you disagree with me, I want to hear about it. I could be way off here. I want to know what people think about it. 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. And Brett is calling in now. Brett, how's it going?
Going good, Noah. Don't have to disagree with you on the calling it by the book statement. It's not a single call or a super important call that they're missing. They're missing easy stuff all the time. Pippen is a very good ball player. I wish he played for Auburn, especially seeing that the things he gets away with. But anytime he is below the free throw line, his off arm is not just there to guard the ball. He extends it probably two-thirds of as far as he can. The only person in the league worse than that is Wheeler for Kentucky. And if you don't believe check out the Alabama-Kentucky game this week and watch Wheeler. If he gets below the free throw line, if he's going left, he's using that right arm, and it's going to be two-thirds or three-quarters of the way out. I mean, I'm 59. I could get separation if I can use my arm that way. If he goes right, he's using that left arm. I watched it after the second half of the Auburn game. I started watching him, and he does it probably 8 to 9 out of 10 times. Officials have got to see that. I have no idea unless they just like how the guy plays. I mean, and y'all are right. The officials react to the crowd. If you don't think so, watch them during the game, even baseball. They'll punch a guy out in baseball like they're happy, and they'll do the same thing in basketball. Officials should not do that. I was certainly not an SEC official, but I used to officiate games. Officials are not supposed to interact with the crowd, which SEC officials do, on a constant basis, constantly during the game. They're supposed to go stand across the way and look straight at the scorer's table. But they're over there hemming and hawing with fans, which is not what they're supposed to do.
Brett, I agree with a lot of what you said there. And talking about the offensive foul, pushing off and whatnot, and stiff arming, you're right. That isn't called enough. That's something that they overlook. And so that's where I go back to the rule book. Maybe the rules need to be adjusted. Maybe the initiative set by the conferences or whoever is managing these officials, maybe they need to set clearer directives and supervise those officials closer than they are to make sure that they're calling the game that they want it to. Because, and we talk about interpretations of the rule book and whatnot. That's in there. You're not allowed to push off, but that's a foul. You're right. That is hardly ever called, whether it's Auburn or Vanderbilt or anybody. That is a foul that is hardly ever called. It's kind of selective enforcement.
Well, I don't want to ruin y'all's watching of the game, but if you happen to watch Kentucky-Alabama, check out Wheeler.
Will do.
Every time. y'all have a great day.
You too, Brett.
That was a good call. I like everything he had to say. Thank you for the call, Brett. Make sure you call in again. Like to have more people call in. If you have an opinion on the officiating in basketball, football, the sports world, give us a call, 334-321-1390, or toll-free at 888-382-7502. And I want to talk about the point he brought up, because he brought up my point of the officials reacting to the crowd, the coaches, and the players, because they 100% do. And I saw this a couple...
Last night, there was a big blocking foul, and it was bam, bam, bam!
Exactly. And here's what I want to say about that. It's been a few weeks, maybe a month or so now, and I don't remember who said it or where I saw it, so I'm sorry that I can't give the proper credit. But somebody made the suggestion that they change the way a charge is called. The motion, you know how it is. They make
the
call.
Punch out.
They stick the hand behind their head and they punch real hard going the other way. And
it's
the
like
crowd,
you're in a 1970s dance off.
Yeah. And if the home crowd gets it, they love it, dude. They're cheering as soon as he pumps that fist. It's, you know. But then on the other side.
TV Teddy, baby.
Exactly. But on the road, it's bam, he hits it. It is boo, you know. But if you change the way they call that to where they can't get so emphatic and so into it, what if it was just stick your hand in the air or something? Like, there's no emphatics about that. Charge, bam, stick your hand in the air or something, or stick it out, something like that. Change how they call it, because they get emotions into that. Referees, they're humans. They have emotions and they get into the game. That was a very interesting thing that I saw, and I agree. I think it could work.
I agree with that. Why does there have to be hand motions in that moment? Spot on with the call, though. Why can't you just blow the whistle?
And then run to the scores table.
And then do the motion.
And then charge. Bam, right there.
Why does it have to be in that motion right there?
Dude,
why can't it just
time,
be the whistle?
Half the time, they take off skipping down the floor, and then they do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you're talking about Teddy Valentine.
Yeah, exactly, man. Like that, you can't tell me.
It's
he
like,
ain't...
who started playing the beach? What is going on?
He's feeding off the crowd when he does yeah. that. He loves it. He loves it. And referees do, too. You can't tell me that there's times where they don't love making that call when the crowd comes at them, or they love hearing the boos at the same time. They love it.
I want to go back to the by-the-book comment from Brett, and this isn't me disagreeing with him. I like he made that point that there are some things that they overlook that are in the book that should be called that they don't call. I think what I was going with there when I was saying by-the-book, just to clarify, is the ticky-tack stuff that was called last night, like an arm bar, someone putting their hands on a ball handler, some of the off-ball fouls that were called last night, the goaltending and whatnot, that's what I meant by-the-book. The stuff that attributed to 49 total fouls being called last night. Like I said, KD Johnson doesn't have to go and karate chop someone on the forearm because they got a rebound, right? Just get back on defense. He got the rebound clean. You're not getting that ball out of his hands, right? And in some cases, you might be able to get a swat, but that is a reach-in. If you miss the ball, you reached in, man. That is exactly what that is. But I do agree with his point that there are a lot of things in the book that aren't called, such as offensive fouls, like pushing off and whatnot. There is selective enforcement. And I think that's where we're getting to right now with the broader area of this discussion. Selective enforcement, I think, is the problem why we don't have consistency in whatever sport we're talking about with officiating. I don't think baseball is as big of a problem with this, but I think when you're talking about basketball and football, there is so much interpretation put into these rules in a live setting that different crews even interpret it differently, right? Like, you got football, you've got targeting, where every official seems to have a different interpretation of the rule. And then in basketball, every single foul is you're interpreting it live in that moment. Maybe the way to keep officials accountable, and I don't know, maybe they're already doing this in these offices, they just may not be doing a very good job of this, but maybe the way to make sure that this happens and officials officiate games more effectively, maybe the best way to achieve this, like I said, is to set clear directives, to set clear interpretations of the rule book and say, this is how we're going to call games. And have, you know, videos to support that, obviously, when you're training these officials. And once again, they probably already do all this. I mean, you probably sound like a broken record to some ref out there if they were listening to our show right now. But I'm just saying, there seems to be too much interpretation in live game settings, as opposed to maybe some of those things could be rectified before they even step out on the court. because you could set clear directions for how you want games to be called. What constitutes a foul? What actually falls into that category?
And there's just so many different aspects to this conversation of how we would change it, how other people would change it, what should be called, what should not be called. There's so many different ways.
Like, do you want basketball to be more physical, right? Like, I play 2K 2022 right now. I got 2K 22. I talked to you guys about this off air. You got Greg Anthony and Clark Kellogg on the video game talking about officiating and the physical nature versus a lighter called game. The fact that we're even having those types of discussions tells you that there's an interpretation in a live game setting. And if every single officiating crew is not on the same page and you're not holding them accountable from within, which would tell me the fact that there is so much inconsistency across basketball that they're probably not doing a very good job of that. If you don't set the standard, like, we are going to allow basketball to be a more physical game or we're going to call it tighter, you're never going to get the desired change that you want. If you want basketball to be tightly called, you want it to be a more offensive game, you want to drive the point totals up, you want there to be more freedom of movement, blow the whistle a bajillion times during one or two seasons, oh, they'll adjust. Look at what targeting did to football. Guys aren't knocking people's heads off like they were 10 years ago. It did its job. Now I think there needs to be some adjustments on the football end with targeting with the way that it's called now. I've gone on the record and said that a lot. But going back to basketball, if you want to make a change, you're going to have to be drastic on one end or the other, right? And personally, my taste of basketball, I like physical brands of basketball. I like to see there be a flow, and I would rather them call less fouls, even if it means more missed shots and a lower score of a basketball game. I would rather see less fouls called in the span of a game.
I 100% agree. I think it helps the flow of the game, makes the game look better, and you got to earn your bucket instead of just as soon as somebody touches you, you go to the free throw line. Everything you just said right there, I agree 100%, my friend. Let's head to break here on the line. When we come back, we'll push back and we'll do our on-the-line Q&A before we head to the media break.
Live on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama, Noah Gardner, Jacob Goins with you. 2:51 p.m. on your Thursday afternoon. Wrapping up hour number one, we've talked a lot about officiating. I do have one more point to make before we get to what's on tonight. This is what I was telling y'all during break. Here's my take on how basketball should be officiated and how I think you could improve it, because my last point that I made is I would prefer a more physical brand of basketball. Offensive players have way too much leeway to get to the charity stripe. I'm not talking about Jabari Smith's getting fouled on threes, and that is partially what I'm talking about, but the bigger problem to me, and I'm not dogging Auburn here, I'm just saying this is what Auburn people watch. They watch Auburn, so I'm trying to get an Auburn example for people to know what I'm talking about. The KD Johnsons, the guys that are driving to the bucket and dive into the contact and get the foul called. Yeah, that's great for Auburn, right? Because Auburn's getting to the free throw line, and the way that basketball is called right now, put them on the charity stripe, right? And if they don't call it, then I'm like, why didn't they call that, right? Because you're not being consistent with how you're actually officiating games. But personally, a change that I would like to see in the game of basketball is offensive players don't have the ability to draw fouls like that. They actually have to get fouled by the opponent. The opponent actually has to do something.
If he would just go up for the layup, he would get the layup more times than he would get the foul, because, I mean, he's not the best free throw shooter. So, I mean, he would probably get more points if he just went up for the layup instead of the free throw.
So that's kind of my take on that, is I think there are ways that we could change our interpretations of the rule to make the game better and more consistent. But let's take a quick break here, just a minute, for what's on TV tonight, and then we'll be back live.
That was what is on TV tonight. We're in shambles in this studio right
Levi
now.
Levi came in. Tracy came in.
It's all good. We have reset here on the show. We got just a couple more minutes before we head to the national break before we come back for hour number two here on the line. If you have any comments about anything we've been talking about, we've had a lot of officiating talk, and it's been good conversation, I think, trying to break down how to make officiating better and more effective across all sports. But if you have a comment on that or anything else going on in the sporting world, give us a call here on the show, 334-321-1390, or toll-free at 888-382-7502. We want to hear from you. Noah, you want to try and squeeze in our on-the-line Q&A before we end the break?
Let's save that for later. Okay. Let's save that for later. Let's get a good segment out of that. Let's talk about what happened last night in college basketball. We got about 2 minutes left here now, a little bit under 2 minutes, before we get out of here for the end of the hour. Let's look at the SEC scores from last night, and then in hour number two, we'll talk about some of the stuff that happened outside the SEC, especially as our good friend Levi Fitzwater comes in. Rutgers, baby! Rutgers on fire! Beat Illinois last night, but we'll talk about that later on. SEC scores, LSU beat Georgia 84-65. In addition, we've already talked about Auburn's win over Vanderbilt 94-80. And Alabama overcame a 7-point second-half deficit with a little over 5 minutes left in the game, as well as a Nate Oates ejection to beat Mississippi State at home 80-75. 25th-ranked Crimson Tide. They creep ever so closely to the NCAA tournament. This is what I've been telling you, man. I'm not happy about it. I'm just saying the SEC is going to get their 7 in. I think it's more likely – or they're going to get their 6 in. I think it's more likely they get 7 than they only have 5. You're seeing it.
Just because you may or may not be leaning towards being right doesn't mean I'm going to admit it until Selection Sunday and the show after that. But, no, Alabama winning last night definitely was a win they had to have. If they lose that game to Mississippi State, then they're on thin ice. But, I mean, they won, and they came back, too. And like you said, it took a Nate Oates late ejection. They played that on the Jumbotron at Auburn Arena last night, and the crowd went nuts. So that was hilarious. I loved it.
That's it for hour number one of the Thursday edition of On the Line. Noah Gardner, Jacob Gones will be back with you at 3 p.m. Levi Fitzwater will be joining us. We'll be doing Playing the Lines with Levi Fitzwater coming up in hour number two. We'll start off hour number two with Making Headlines, talking a little Auburn and Alabama basketball, as well as some Auburn baseball makes an appearance as well. Hour number two coming up, 3 p.m.
You're on the line here with Jacob Goins and Noah Gardner on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Jacob Goins, Noah Gardner with you. Levi Fitzwater is now in the house. It's a packed studio for hour number two on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Hour number one was good. If you missed any part of it, just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. It goes up immediately after the show. If you have any thoughts on anything we've been talking about, officiating Auburn basketball, or anything else going on in the sporting world, give us a call here on the show, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. We want to hear from you. Levi, how you doing this week, man?
Doing well. Very, very enjoyable Super Bowl Sunday. I ended up, you know, on games that, again, entertainment purposes only, that I was just sketching down throughout. I did pretty well on a lot of prop bets and things of that nature, obviously.
Did you get the anthem right?
I never had my mic on, man. I never had my mic on.
As Noah asked.
I'm joking.
Yes, I did get the
anthem. He knows I'm not mad.
The anthem was about half a second over the 1:10 second mark, so I got that. Tails did, in fact, fail, so heads was shredding.
I said that live. I said head. Heads shred.
Heads shred. OBJ scored a touchdown, which helped me out. Him getting hurt did stifle the receptions and receiving yards over because, I mean, if Eli Apple comes out and says, I want to guard OBJ, you take every over that you can find on the guy because Eli Apple, arguably the worst player in NFL history at this point. And then I took T. Higgins over his receiving yards and anytime touchdown. He scored two. That popped twice. Missed the Gatorade. And I missed Snoop Dogg wearing blue shoes. Everything else was blue about his attire, but he wore white shoes. So I missed on that one. But other than that, pretty good little Super
Bowl Sunday.
I was so
wrong about blue, man. About the blue Gatorade.
Oh, yeah.
I said, nobody drinks blue Gatorade.
Blue
and then
blue is now 3 out of 4. 3 out of 4 in the past Super Bowl.
That means it can't be blue next year, right? Like that, I can't go against blue, but then it's going to happen.
Just stay out of it, man.
Yep, avoid it. There's too much of a trend there now.
Yeah, too many eyes are noticing that. But yeah, it was a very enjoyable Super Bowl. I mean, up until, you know, the end of the game where the power hungry egomaniacs say, oh, we have to come in here and flex our muscle because we haven't got to do anything all game. And yes, I'm talking about the refs because
we've talked about the refs all show long.
I hate the refs. You know how I feel about referees. You know I hate them.
Right on time.
I think we know today's show title is something ref related.
Yeah, something like that.
They're up there with soccer players playing football. Them and kickers are the worst two things that ever happened to the game of football.
Sheesh, that's hot right there.
There I said it.
That is hot. You're a day late on Hot Take Wednesday, but that's okay. But let's start out hour number two with Making Headlines. First of all, Auburn last night takes down Vanderbilt 94-80 to advance to 24-2 overall with a two-game lead atop of the SEC standings. Levi, what was your thoughts after Auburn's victory last night at home against the Commodores?
So I think they overall played well. I mean, obviously, you know, we were talking about this in the studio before we, you know, went back on air. Honestly, it was a little bit closer because of turnover problems, and a lot of it was from Alan Flanagan, which, again, I'll talk to y'all about it. I didn't get to watch it live, so I had to go back through and sort of piece together through box score, highlights, etc. It's nice to see Jabari Smith having the game that he had, you know, flexing why that he's one of the top prospects that he is. And I,
the top prospect.
Yeah, the top prospect. I mean, I think he's number one overall prospect, but, you know.
I would much rather draft Jabari Smith than the other two candidates for number one overall.
I mean, I think that, for me, it just comes down to position-wise, too. Like, even if you're splitting hairs on, you know, arguable talent and you're just trying to figure that out, I just feel like his position is more valuable.
He can play the three if you want him to as well. There's a whole lot more wins adjusted there for Jabari Smith, like you're saying, rather than – and you can say that with Banchero at Duke, and I know you're a Duke guy, so Banchero falls into this category, but if you're comparing Jabari Smith to Banchero, it's clear that Jabari Smith is the better prospect. And so then it's Jabari versus Chet Holmgren, and like you're saying – position. Chet Holmgren's going to play center, and there's even questions whether or not he's going to be able to do that as effectively at the next level as he is right now because of his frame.
And that's fair.
He's thin.
And that's why I think, I mean, you look at, you know, years ago when you're thinking of a guy like Jahlil Okafor coming out of Duke, where you're thinking that's a top three can't-miss prospect, and you see the center position sometimes, it flames out in those early
picks. Bust a lot. Let's just be real.
When you're at the early
Who has hit? What centers have hit? Like DeAndre Yayton, it's taken a little while.
Yeah, and I mean, you think of a guy like Nikola Jokic, who he was in the second round.
Nerlens,
you
know? Noel.
Yeah, like those.
Flop.
The guys who are picked early in the center, they don't typically, not in today's NBA. I mean, not in today's NBA where it's more spread out.
Greg Oden?
Oh, yikes.
Greg, poor Greg Oden, man.
But the center position nowadays is not as dominant and as heavy, and
it's not as visible, it's not as central to what teams want to do,
and it's not as heavy on when it comes to wins and picking up victories in the NBA as back when Shaq was the center of the NBA. So that, I think that's why when centers get drafted out of college into the pros, I think they have a hard time, because especially if you think about somebody like a Chet Holmgren, look at his build. You know, he's a tall, skinny guy, and the NBA is full of some
Walker
men
Kessler?
And dudes. I think both of them are going to have struggles if they don't put on a little bit of muscle,
well,
weight,
the reason
whatever.
Why Chet Holmgren, if people are wondering why he is a better NBA prospect than Walker Kessler and why Chet Holmgren's going to go in the top 10, top 5, the reason why, yep, that's right, Levi's throwing up the three goggles. The reason why Chet Holmgren's going to be a top 3 pick in the draft, top 5 pick in the draft, and why Walker Kessler is going to be towards the end of the first round is because when you're talking about translating a player from college to the NBA, there are more tools that I think are going to translate more easily with Chet Holmgren than Walker Kessler. Both of them are lacking in the weight realm. They're lacking in the frame. They're going to be some shorter players, sure, but they're going to be able to body them up potentially and go through them to the rim, where their shot blocking is not going to be as effective when you're going through them. I think both of them are going to be good shot blockers at the next level. I think both of them need to be able to put on a little bit of weight. But Chet Holmgren has a little bit more in his offensive tool belt, especially in the way of shooting the basketball. I think the guy's shooting like 45% from three over his last three or four games, whereas Walker Kessler, on a good day, might be 20%, right? And I do think that that area of Walker Kessler's game can still develop, but clearly there's a unicorn-like aspect to Chet Holmgren's offensive ability to be able to drive, handle the basketball, whereas Walker Kessler's not quite there.
Look at all the bigs, like the centers who are, you know, dominant in the NBA or a team's best player. They can all shoot threes. They're all, you know, they're Joel Embiid, they're Nikola Jokic, they're guys like that who have that range ability.
I mean, Joel Embiid's even taught himself how to have a little bit longer range.
He really didn't have that coming out of college. Yeah. I mean, that's not saying that a guy like Walker Kessler can't develop that and at the next level once he starts, you know, working into that NBA groove. But that's what we're saying, that that's the reason why that the center position, at least for, you know, how you're saying the difference between Walker Kessler and
Miles Turner.
Yeah.
With the Indiana Pacers, another player. I mean, you break down these guys, there are more centers now being able to shoot threes than ever before.
That's just where the NBA is. But when you watch Walker Kessler shoot the three, he's not a bad three-point shooter. He has a pretty good-looking stroke, and he shoots it so high that I don't think many people are going to be able to affect his shot. It's just getting it down to a pat and get down to a rhythm for him to be able to consistently shoot the three ball. And, of course, at Auburn, that's not what they're trying to do with him. So I don't know.
I think they wanted it at the start, but it didn't quite pull along like they did.
And that's why he came to Auburn originally.
They wanted it to.
Because he, if you look back, he came to Auburn because he originally went to North Carolina because they thought he thought they were going to let him shoot and do whatever he wanted to do, and they didn't. So he came to Auburn thinking he was going to be doing the same thing. Now, of course, he's not, but he's dominating in his role, and I think he likes it.
His location to shoot a three where he is going to be most effective is
top of the key.
Top of the key. Yep. A little bit offset to the left or right. It's a very small portion on the three-point line, but it's an air ball anywhere else. It really is. It is not going to come close to draining if he's in a corner, and he may have hit one or two from the wing, but he is at the top of the key.
But those are shots that you take with him once or twice a game where you run a play with him out of bounds or something right. like that. You draw up a play for him to get that shot. That's not you don't work that into the offense and call that play as you're running down the floor.
And as long as it's respectable, I mean, you don't have to, you don't have, like as a guy like Walker Kessler, you don't have to shoot the ball, you know, five, six times a game you from the 3-point line. You just have to be respectable. That way it pulls the defense out a little bit and allows your teammates to be able to, you know, drive inside, cut the basket and give you a little bit, you know, just spread the defense out some, create some holes. You don't have to be, he doesn't have to be out there shooting like Wendell Green. He just has to – you have to respect it because we've all played pickup basketball. We've all seen what happens when guys like Shaq catch the ball at the top of the key. You sag off
Ricky Rubio's.
Yeah, you sag off of
that guy can't shoot.
Rajon Rondo.
Yeah, you just – they sag off of it. It clogs the lane up, and that's not good for the offense in totality. So, I mean, as long as
Russell Westbrook's, you know.
Russell Westbrook. Let's continue on with making headlines. Alabama last night, another game in the SEC. They overcame a second-half deficit and a Nate Oates ejection late in the second half to come back and beat Mississippi State in Coleman Coliseum, 80-75, guys.
I must have been under a rock last night when the arena went crazy for him getting ejected. I completely missed it.
They did. They put it on the screen in Auburn Arena because they played most of the second half of that game on the screen because Auburn was still waiting to obviously tip off. And they did. They showed when he got ejected, and at least the students, they went nuts.
I must have missed it. I did. I was underneath the rock.
You were in that concession line, Noah.
I did go to the concession stand probably around that time. Was it about 7 minutes before the game started?
Give or take, yeah.
Yep, I was in the line.
Wow.
What was the pregame meal?
We got I got a Konecka dog. Okay.
We love Konecka sausage.
Not the hot dog, the actual sausage. Yeah. And then the wife got chicken fingers.
Okay. Respectable.
And two waters. We were trying to, you know, keep the prices a little low.
Yeah.
Still spent a lot more at the Auburn basketball game than I would have if we had eaten anywhere else.
That's fair. It's crazy how stadium prices are. But yeah, I mean,
it'd be like that.
It's good to see Auburn fans, you know, in the jungle getting into it whenever you see Nate Oates getting ejected. But this Alabama team, they're so, I'll keep saying it, enigmatic, man. They're just, they rattle off wins. They have head-scratching losses. I think they're going to end up into the tournament. I really do.
Everybody keeps asking, like, saying that like it's a question. They are in, guys. I mean, they are in. They unless there is a catastrophic disaster.
Which had to start last night, and they got the win.
They're like top six or seven in
they're
quad one wins.
They're a five seed right now, man. They are a five seed in the bracket.
That's horrible.
They are.
Terrible.
Terrible.
I'm with you.
That does seem a little bit high, right? That does. But they are in the tournament, guys. There is little doubt in my mind that the SEC is going to get six teams in the dance. And I'm going to keep hammering that point because you said four a couple of weeks ago. Now you've backed off to five. I am hammering that home. The SEC is getting six teams in.
I mean, you look at their wins. I mean, a few games ago, they were like fifth or sixth, seventh in quad one wins. Like it's hard to keep a team like that out, even if they have just some miserable losses. Because if you look at it, teams in the tournament, they're good, which means that you'll probably get the best version of Alabama if they seem to play, you know, up to the level of competition when they play those good teams. So you're going to have a good tournament team in Alabama when they come in. So It makes sense for them to be in there. I think they're going to be in there, and I hate it, but, you know, it is what it is. They're a tournament team right now.
But let's change Alabama's name to someone else, right? Because there's some bias involved here if you're an Auburn person and you just don't want to see Alabama in the tournament, right?
What?
But let's say this was – say the two names were switched last night. It was Mississippi State that's 17-9, and somehow Mississippi State of all teams has wins over Gonzaga, Houston, and Baylor, right?
and LSU and Tennessee, like they have some spectacular wins right now, right? Let's say that it wasn't Alabama. I would much rather see that team in the tournament than some random bubble team from the Mountain West or from the WCC, because I know that that team has much more the opportunity to do something interesting in March because they've already proven it with the caliber of teams that they've played. Likewise, it could be disastrous in the first round for them, right? It could be a first-round loss, but isn't that exciting too? Like, isn't the other side of the spectrum that they could lose in the first round and that could be spectacular to watch?
I just think it's better if they just don't make the tournament at all. But
that you're saying that because they're Alabama.
No, but at the same time, if you do switch the names and it's Mississippi State in this situation, whatever.
You would not want to see Mississippi State in the tournament. Your opinion on this would not be changed whatsoever.
No, I don't think so.
At 17-9, 7-6, and how deep the SEC is this year with wins over three teams inside the top 15 in our current AP poll right now. And those were all top, what, 10, top 7 wins at the time when they played them?
I'm a little swayed over here by your argument, just looking at the teams, like the last four byes, the last four in, your first four out, your next four out.
The bubble stinks.
I'm kind of looking at this. I'd rather see Alabama play someone than Belmont.
Would you rather see Alabama in the tournament? Say Mississippi State. Let's change the name. It's not Alabama, right?
I'd rather see that those
players. Team A versus 14-12 Oklahoma, gentlemen. And Oklahoma is in the field right now, according to Bracketology, unless they've dropped to the bubbles. Yeah, Lenardi's updated it.
They're in the buys.
I mean, that's just ridiculous.
How are my Rutgers Scarlet Knights the next four out?
Exactly.
This is ridiculous.
Exactly. I would rather see Rutgers, though, in the dance.
Than Alabama? Yes, I would. Nice. Good take.
I would rather see Rutgers in the dance than San Francisco or BYU. BYU's at like 17-7, and they're considered a bubble team. And I'm like, what? What? What have they done? They've done nothing to warrant being in the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, you make a valid argument, okay? You make a valid argument.
Just doesn't want to hear it.
I don't want to hear it, not until the day after Selection Sunday. On that day, on that Monday on the show, you could come in and say, Jacob, you were wrong.
But
that's
okay. I do want to say this about Alabama's performance last night. Outstanding pivot on defense.
Yes,
this team held Mississippi State to 36% as a team from the field. This is an Alabama team that's defense has been called out. Effort has been called out a lot. Alabama's been playing some pretty decent defense down the stretch, and that's how they've been winning some of these close ball games. They held Arkansas to 67 points this past weekend, 68 points, whichever it was, held them in the 60s. Arkansas has a lot of possessions. They're one of the faster teams, and while they're not an efficient offensive team, from a field goal perspective, they score a lot of points, and Alabama held them in the 60s after they just beat Auburn, right? And sure, you can bring up the hangover aspect of it and whatever, but Alabama's actually been playing some pretty good defense down the stretch. The offense is as bad as it always is, right? They only shot 44%. It's not great, but they're not shooting the three ball well right now. They may never get that three-point shot back. They're relying heavily on their backcourt. They're going to have to. But Alabama, they grinded one out last night. They grinded it out on defense, which is not the style of win that we're accustomed to seeing with this Alabama team. But they've been doing it down the stretch.
And to your point, I mean, it's the defense. They've made a nice pivot and been able to actually – stop people. And that's big. I mean, that's something that will translate. They need to find something offensively. I think that's where the inconsistencies come from when you look at this team throughout the year.
You miss 33s. You can't do that, right?
Exactly. That's where you have these quad one wins against Gonzaga, against Baylor, when the shots start to fall a little bit. But that's where you have the losses against Missouri come in, because your offense has been inept most of the year. And if you can play defense, you will stay in almost every game. If they can keep up the defense that they have been playing, they will be in almost every game. They just have to find a little bit more offense. And if they find a little bit more, that's a scary team come March. Like, it's actually a team that you fear going into the tournament.
Jacob, what's our next headline?
Next headline, Jim Harbaugh. Of course, the rumors a couple of weeks ago that he had interviewed with the Minnesota Vikings. They actually are introducing their new head coach today. But he did not take that new job and signed an extension with Michigan, netting him a base salary of $7.05 million this fall. But the contract he signed leaves a little bit of an opening for him to be able to get out with a lower buyout, for him to be able to go to the NFL if he wants to in a couple of years.
I still think he has to pay like $3 million or something like that if he leaves, and then it slowly but surely decreases over time, obviously, because that's how buyouts work. But I think if you were to leave initially, like say you left next year or something like that, I think you'd have to pay like almost half of what his base salary is right now, which is at $7 million. I don't think Jim Harbaugh is going back to the NFL, gentlemen, because I don't see how he is going to have another year like he did this past season. And granted, he's got his quarterback coming back, and Cade McNamara, who is a good, steady force for the offense, but he's not a difference maker. He's not a college football playoff caliber quarterback. He's not a guy that's going to win you games when you are down in the dumps. He's not going to make your team better. He is not, in my analogy, I've gone to this, Colin Coward says this, and you have, this is the first time you're going to hear me say this, but he's not a truck. He is the trailer. He is the one getting pulled, not the one doing the pulling, right? And that's nothing against Cade McNamara, another terminology for this, game manager, right? That is nothing against the game managers. They are needed. We need those guys, all right? I'm not dogging the guy. I'm just saying what we've seen on him so far, he is not going to be somebody that is going to completely elevate everyone around him. They've lost some really good players on defense now to the NFL. This is not going to be as good of a Michigan football team. It took Jim Harbaugh, what, 8 years, 7 years to get to this point?
And to be
however
Ohio
long
State.
He's been here. Yeah, I mean, it's taken him this long to get here. If it takes him another 6-7 years, does he even still have a job at Michigan? He signed he had a restructured deal going into this year because Michigan was making it incentive-based. Remember, everybody griped about his extension? They're like, why did he get an extension? I was like, it's incentive-based. It made it easier, if anything, I think, to help them get rid of him if they wanted to. I just don't see him getting another NFL opportunity.
I agree with you, because I think we said this last week, where this is a year where we saw everything go right for Michigan. And what happened? It still wasn't even really Final Four playoff standard, because they got drummed in the college football playoffs. And I think the thing was,
which they played Alabama. I think that might have been a different story, but
agreed. I mean, I can agree with that. I think the big thing was, this was his year, because I think when he left, I think it was dead set he was going to Miami. I think that was a foregone conclusion. Stephen Ross, Michigan man, was trying to get Jim Harbaugh down there, which is why he fired Brian Flores. Then all the cloud comes in. The cloud of what happened with Flores, the losing allegations, and Stephen Ross had to pivot, and he couldn't hire Jim Harbaugh. So he flirted with Minnesota and then went back to Michigan, and now Stephen Ross is probably going to be out, and that was the lifeline, I think, for Jim Harbaugh to get back to the NFL, was having a guy like Stephen Ross, Michigan man, trying to pull him in. So I think this was his year. With all that combined, now all that's gone, I think this is – I think Jim Harbaugh's safe in the college football world, like safe to stay there and not go to the NFL anytime.
He's not
going
to flame out, right? Like he's not going to end up jobless or anything like that. Yeah. And not like that would be a concern for a college football head coach from a financial standpoint. But I'm just saying, like, he's not going to flame out to where his career is going to bomb out. Somebody's going to want the guy.
I mean, his floor is roughly going to be around like 7-5, 8-4 most years.
And let's just be real. If he has another 10-win season at Michigan, which is going to be hard to do, let's just be honest. He didn't do that on a repeated, consistent basis at Michigan. But if he has another 10-win season, another NFL job's going to open up. And because of his previous success in the NFL, he could have that opportunity. I just don't know how long that's going to be before he does that again.
But I think I think he's hit his peak when it comes to college ball. I mean,
doesn't mean that he can't hit that peak again. We just don't know when that's going
to
happen.
Exactly. I think he still wants to coach in the NFL. I don't know how old he is. Do you guys know how old he is?
He's relatively in his 50s, right?
Okay. I think there's still time for him to go back to the NFL, because he would not have interviewed with NFL teams in this offseason if he wasn't looking to go somewhere.
58.
And then 58. Okay. All right. So he's still got 10 or 12 years of coaching at least. So I think he wants to be an NFL head coach. And this is just, at this point, Michigan is just a placeholder. At this point, it's a safe spot where he can just kind of do his own thing, build a better resume from the last few years, and try to go find an NFL job somewhere. That's how I take it, especially with how they formed this contract for Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. Let's take a break here on the live. When we come back, we'll discuss college basketball, what's coming up tonight, and then after that, in the next segment, we'll do Playing the Lines with Levi Fitzwater. You're listening to On the Line on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports, Central Alabama.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Jacob Goins, joined by Levi Fitzwater here for his segment of Playing the Lines with Levi Fitzwater. We're going to do that next segment. Happy to have you on with us today, my friend. I'm glad you had a good Super Bowl.
It was super enjoyable. Like I said, I hate that I had to pivot because last week I was talking about I like the Rams -4. And honestly, I think that still would have been the bet had OBJ not gotten hurt. But I pivoted. I wanted to cheer for the Bengals. Picked the Bengals +4. I had a little bit of money line. You know, liked them to win outright. And they almost did it. But sometimes, you know, when you have Eli Apple, that's what happens.
Let's take a look at what's going on in college basketball tonight. We got about 3 minutes here in this segment before we got to go to the network break. It's a lighter night just because it's Thursday, but the Big Ten is on display this evening, and you do have a couple of games going on. You got a couple of games going on in each time slot at 6 and 8 o'clock, so that's good to see that you're at least going to have ESPN, ESPN2, and ESPNU at 6 and 8 p.m., but unfortunately, you have to watch the American Athletic Conference.
Hey, there's a game on right now, man. Minnesota-Penn State that's on right. The Big Ten Network.
That is true. What's the score?
18-11, Penn State with 7:52 to go in the first half. That is a standalone game, as John Rothstein likes to say.
That's right. Penn State up, like you said, 18-13 on Minnesota.
Oh, 13, sorry.
I guess they must have just added to it.
Yep, there it is. There it is.
Looking at some of the games happening tonight, Wichita State's at Cincinnati in the American Athletic Conference. That's on ESPN2. Cincinnati favored by 2.5. Talking about one of those bubble teams that's just gross. They're 16-9. Would you rather see Cincinnati at 16-9 or Alabama?
Cincinnati.
I know. Knowing where you're from Ohio. But Wichita State at 13-9, they're on the road. I love the Shockers, man. That is a basketball jersey that I want. I've had that on Christmas list for a couple years. Still hasn't happened. Michigan's at Iowa on ESPN. That's going to be a good one tonight. Talk about, once again, two bubble teams. Michigan's 13-10 is on the bubble.
They've got good wins.
They do have some good wins.
Good wins do not trump bad losses.
I think they do.
Because anybody can get beat in basketball on any given night. So like
Iowa's at 17-7 on the bubble. What have they done? They don't have a Q1 win, I don't think.
They do not have a Q1 win. That is a huge stat. Iowa does not have a quad one win all season long. How does that make a tournament? That's awful.
The Big Ten is just
awful.
I think the top's good.
The Big Ten is decent.
But it's hilarious. Like, I mean, you just have like a lot of
mid majors.
You have a lot of good teams. Like, there's not many great teams. Like, you have what, Purdue, and then who's shaky themselves, and then you have some guys who can get it done. A couple of teams that can get it done: Iowa's, Michigan's, Michigan State's, Wisconsin, Rutgers. And next thing you know, they're being carried by Purdue right now. The Purdue Boilermakers, the train is carrying the Big Ten right now.
I know you're a Rutgers guy, Levi. Give us your take on Rutgers.
16-9.
Why should they be in the tournament?
I mean, look at the stretch of games.
Four straight against ranked teams.
That came off really negative. I did not mean for it to be. I was just asking your opinion why Rutgers should be in the tournament.
These guys need to be ranked. They're only getting 10 votes right now. Get them in the top 25.
I love how we were just passively talking last week about which win meant better.
Yeah, we were like, there's no way that these guys are going to go and win these next three or four games. And lo and behold.
My random take of, you know, it could mean more for Rutgers if, hypothetical, big hypothetical, they go and win these next, like, if they won one or two out of the next four, and then look at them, they're, you know, they beat Wisconsin, they beat Illinois, Purdue's shaky. They could go into West Lafayette and win that game.
Here's the pitch on Rutgers. They're 5-1 against the top 25.
Bam. There it is.
You want a team like that in the tournament.
They're a game and a half out of first place in the Big Ten standings. They may be 16-9. They may have started out slow this year, but they're 10-5 in the Big Ten. They're 5-1.
That's how you finish
against top 25 teams. There is no reason for them to be in the next four out of the bubble right now. They need to be in the tournament. This is a team that is catching the heat right now. Rutgers, put the Scarlet Knights in. More of On the Line coming up. On the other side of this break, we'll be doing Playing the Lines with Levi Fitzwater. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner, Levi Fitzwater, Jacob Goins with you on the show today. Jacob and I just had that Spider-Man meme moment. We both pointed at each other to bring back in the show. Good to have you here. If you want to call in, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. Time for Playing the Lines with Levi Fitzwater. Levi, Take it away, my man. What do you got for us first?
Oh, man.
You had a pretty good week.
Yeah, I had a pretty good week. I've been doing pretty well with college basketball, so I'm going to keep trying to stick to my guns. Like last week I told you, they were all terrible. Tonight, equally as terrible, but I did find one game that I actually liked. Oregon, Arizona State. That game is at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8 p.m. local time.
Bubble team, yeah. Oregon.
Oregon is -5 in this game. I saw it in -4.5 this morning when I was looking at it and studying over it. It seems like a trap. That game makes no sense, and you know how I feel about those games.
I see the Ducks at 5.5 now.
Yeah, it's shifting, and I think that's scaring me because I feel like it's Arizona State. Like when I looked at this game early on, I said Oregon is just an infinitely better team than Arizona State. I don't know how Arizona State managed to beat UCLA. I don't know how, like, that team is just not good right now. And it seems that every time Arizona State has caught one of these wins, the other team just decided not to shoot the basketball well at all that day. And I would love to say, oh yeah, they just played very, good defense. They were a credit to that. And it does not seem like that is the case from what I've seen. So everything tells me you should be backing the Ducks in this game, which is going to steer me in the other direction. You got 68% of people on Oregon. Like you said, Jacob, the line is climbed up to 5.5. That means people are just hammering the Ducks. I would just wait on this game, and I would take Arizona State +5, +5.5 in this one. I think that's the safer play is what it seems like with this game.
That's a bold pick. I like it, though. I like bold picks when it comes to stuff like this. And if I looked at the game originally and I saw Oregon -4.5 or even -5 on the road at a terrible Arizona State team, I would be tempted to jump on it as well. But always fade the public.
That's what it is. Like, and when I started getting into, looking at lines and things of that nature, one of the first things I was told, the first pieces of advice was if it looks too good to be true, it is too good to be true. There was a game, I think this was probably 2017, 2018, when I really started getting into studying this. And I want to say it was South Carolina and Kentucky were playing in football. And I don't remember what the line was, but I remember looking at it and said, oh, that's a gimme. That is a layup. And I want to say South Carolina was the team that I was looking at and was like, there's no way that this line doesn't hit. And they got absolutely throttled in that game. And that was when that piece of advice hit me. And I said, you know what? Sometimes you just have to look at it and go, Vegas is smart. They are here for a reason. I know what they're doing, and that's what makes me like this line for Arizona State. I hate it. Line stinks. It looks like a trap, like Noah said, which is what's going to
Admiral Akbar in the studio. It's a trap.
It's a trap. So I'm going to lean Arizona State +5. I don't like any of the other college games. I like some of the NBA games.
No
tonight.
Michigan, Iowa. What are your thoughts on Michigan, Iowa? Because I just cranked out my math formula that you guys know, which is 5-1 right now, granted, at just picking games.
Well, what's your formula say tonight? And then we'll ask what Levi's pick is.
Oh, man, this is the first time I've seen someone score this high in the formula. This is crazy. I got Iowa cranking it out tonight.
Wow.
Now, once again, this is not lines related. This is just... And granted, it is 5-1. It's work in progress. I do this for the NCAA tournament typically. So in the regular season, I start tinkering with it to make sure, I got it where I want it when I get to the tournament time. And it basically just spits out a number for both of these teams based off of certain statistics that I factor into it. And this one is one of the most lopsided I've seen.
So Iowa, you think your formula says Iowa pick up their first quad. Is Michigan a quad one win? It should be, right?
No way. They're 13-10. And it's a home game for Iowa. I don't think it's a Q1 game. Well, I don't think it's a Q1 game.
Oh, well. So you got Iowa winning tonight, according to the formula.
They're favored by 5 on the line. Now, once again, this has nothing to do with the line. This is just me picking the game, straight up. But yeah. I like Iowa to win this one.
If you're making me pick, I would take Iowa -5. Typically, I don't – I'm not a big favorites guy. I typically back the underdog and take the points. But Iowa 13-2 straight up at home. It has all of the feels, all of the things where this game, Iowa feels more like an at-large team. Like Michigan, they're both sort of, Michigan's a bubble team.
They're 13-10. They're not getting in.
Yeah. It doesn't.
They may not even be in the NIT.
Yeah. But it feels like it actually means something to Iowa.
They're CBI at large.
At home, CBI at large. And it's at it's at home again, Iowa 13-2 at home. I might be inclined, I have a little bit of hesitancy to say that they crank them. But I am leaning more towards that they win this handily.
Okay, maybe not crank them. I'm just saying. I think Iowa wins. Okay,
I think they win, and I think they cover, and I think they probably cover by a good bit. I just think they control this game.
Let's look at recent history for Michigan, right? Let's go look at the last five games. Let's see what they've done in the month of February, right? They beat Nebraska by 6. Congratulations for beating one of the worst teams in Power 5 basketball, only by 6.
Hang the banner. We beat Nebraska.
They hung with Purdue the first go-round, only lost by 6, okay? Then they only beat Penn State by 1. Once again, congratulations. You hung with one of the worst teams in Power 5 basketball. Then they beat Purdue, obviously. They won that game by 24. Everybody went wild. It was like, oh, man, Michigan, they're turning the corner. And then they lost to Ohio State by 11 at home. I just think going on the road, you're playing this Iowa team that's 17-7, knows how to score the basketball really well. Something else that jumps off the paper for me on Iowa, they are third to best in college basketball. They are third in college basketball in turnovers per game at 8.8. And this is a team that plays a faster brand of basketball. They get a lot of shots up. They're eighth in the country in field goal attempts, yet they're still 67th in field goal percentage. They knock down a lot of threes. They have a bona fide NBA prospect in Keegan Murray.
Bona fide.
I look at this. I think they're going to drop a ton of points tonight. And I just don't think Michigan's offense is built to score and run in an up-tempo game like this, and I expect this game to be played at Iowa's tempo at home. It may not. I'm not saying it's going to be a blowout, but I feel comfortable in saying, and I could end up being wrong, but I do like Iowa tonight.
I like it too. I like the pick of Iowa. I think they're just the better basketball team. I like the points being at home as well as they have played at home, and I just don't think Michigan's got it to run with Iowa. Not that Iowa's anything spectacular, but I like the Hawkeyes tonight over Michigan.
Key stat category here is turnovers. 8.8 turnovers per game for Iowa. Their opponents turn the ball over 14.6 times per game.
Can't do that on the road.
And this being at home, and I know Michigan doesn't turn the basketball over a ton, but I think even just the way that Michigan plays, the slower brand of basketball, even just one or two turnovers can affect the entire outcome of the game. Levi, I know you said you like some games in the NBA, though.
Yeah, before I get to that, there was one game that I was leaning in college basketball. I'll just throw that out there. I do kind of like Washington State tonight. I like the Cougars catching against 9.
Where are they playing? UCLA.
They're playing at UCLA. I mean, UCLA's been kind of a little bit slumpy here lately.
But do they break out at home?
And that's why that's more of a lean. That's not a game that I'm sitting here going, this is a line that I like, that I'm, confident in, that if I was, not just saying this for entertainment purposes only, and was a guy who was putting money on this, I would not, this is not a game I would be doing. This is a game where I'm like, I like it, but I'm not super confident in it. I think Washington State lost to Arizona by 12 last outing, and it just feels like one of those bounce back game spots for Washington State when you look at it. UCLA slumping, but again, I could see the Bruins actually just catching, getting back into form at home. When he goes to the NBA, there's a couple of spots that I do like for that. The Heat, -4.5, they are playing the Charlotte Hornets. Miami just lost the game. They are 14-6 against the spread after a loss. That's the best in the NBA. It's a good spot to get behind.
Woo!
Charlotte's offense has been miserable. They're
massive losing streak right now. I think they're at 8 or 9 games in a row now that they've lost.
And they're at 28th in offensive efficiency right now. They're spiraling right now
in the wrong direction
when you're looking at offense. And guess what? Miami Heat, still a good defensive team. Not the team you want to play against when you're having offensive troubles. You don't want to go against the Miami Heat with Bam Adebayo and that length. That is just not good for you. So I would take Miami. I would take them -4.5 in that spot. Other game, Mavericks, Pelicans. I see under 214.5. The Dallas Mavericks have been the best under team in the NBA. A lot of their games have been under slow-paced defensive teams, or a defensive team, and playing against another defensive team in the Pelicans. Now, that kind of goes against
defensive
what
or just poorly, poor offensive team.
Both. They're both. And that's one of those things where.
And Zion's out as well. They're top playmakers.
And the Pelicans have been playing well as of late. I mean, when Jackson Hayes is playing power forward, not center, he's actually a good NBA player and not, pretty terrible when he's playing center. It goes against what I like in terms of picking the best under team in the NBA in the Dallas Mavericks, but they just went on a stretch where they were hitting a couple overs. I think it was 4 or 5 games out of 6 they were hitting the overs. So I will stick to this score. I think this is just an under made to happen, 214.5. Mavericks and Pelicans, I think they will be slow-paced defensive game.
And that line is adjusted according to – I use Yahoo, the Yahoo Sports app. They give some lines. And it's at 216.5 right now, so that gives you an extra 2 points.
Yeah, I would take that. See, I do a lot of these this morning before I come in.
Right. I just want to try to give you the updated line. So you got 216.5
total. I'll take
total,
that, too.
So that helps you out, man.
I will gladly take that. I will gladly take the increase in points every single time.
Talking NBA, Philadelphia 76ers against the Milwaukee Bucks tonight. 7:30 TNT. It's our lone NBA game on television tonight as the All-Star break begins tomorrow. James Harden, 76ers.
When's Harden going to
play? When is he going to play?
I don't know. I don't know.
Status out.
I say he's not playing the All-Star game either. I mean, he had some sort of hamstring issue that he's still nagging and dealing with.
76ers got beat by 48 points last time out.
76ers are going to run him out of town.
Y'all heard me correctly. 48 points.
From the Boston Celtics.
They're on fire. They're on fire.
They're playing good ball.
Levi?
I'm very confuzzled by the big trade because they traded one headache for another headache in James Harden. Like, their problem with Ben Simmons was he didn't shoot and he wasn't playing. And what is...
Yeah, he didn't shoot because he wasn't playing.
And that too. But James Harden hasn't been playing either. Like, is he just magically going to heal his hamstring? Like, they're going to get fed up.
When he gets in there, he'll shoot the basketball.
For sure. Philadelphia fans have about a microcentimeter of patience. They booed Santa Claus. The Eagles fans, they booed Santa.
Just Philly for you, man.
And that's what I'm saying. Like,
Tough crowd.
It's very puzzling to me that that's where James Harden wanted to go because he seemed like a guy who has not wanted that extra pressure from the fans, and he wants to go there where one little thing goes wrong and they are going to absolutely just slaughter him in the media.
I just don't think James Harden is that concerned with winning. That is what I've picked up on his career since he's been in the league. I just don't think he's not worried about winning basketball games. He gets paid hundreds of millions of dollars to dribble and shoot the ball a million times a game, and I think he's okay with that.
And go spend time at leisure activities outside of basketball.
Whoop.
I don't think either of these players involved in this trade are that concerned with winning, I don't think Ben Simmons is either.
I don't think he can win. I don't think Ben Simmons can win. James Harden just doesn't care, in my opinion. I don't think he cares about winning, and Ben Simmons can't win, so...
Apparently tonight the Nets are at home against the Wizards. Obviously this one not televised, but Kyrie, Ben, and Kevin Durant are all out.
And the Nets are still favored.
Yeah. The Wizards are a bad basketball team.
They're 26-31.
That's not good.
It's better than the Pelicans.
Yeah. The Nets right now, they are only 3 games out of 10th place. Just saying. I'm talking about the play-in tournament. They're currently an 8 seed. Season has gone in a nasty direction for them due to all the injuries. My man Steve Nash does not deserve this.
I just really want the Nets and the Sixers both in the playoffs, and I want that series. I just want that series because I think that series might actually just involve people hitting each other.
It could be the 1-8.
It might be Malice at the Palace.
It could be the 1-8, the 1-8 matchup at this rate.
Yeah. I mean, I like the way that the NBA is shaking out this year. We've got some teams that have emerged that are back in the picture. The brands of the Bulls and the Cavs, I like the Cavs that are relevant
again. Cavs, baby.
The Heat are a 2 seed. You've got some good brands. The Celtics are surging right now. To believe it or not, the 6th seed in the East right now is only 4.5 games out of first. So you've got there are tight margins right now in the Eastern Conference, and there's still a lot of moving and shaking to go on in the Eastern Conference standings. And then the Western Conference, of course, that's always fun.
That's
where all the good basketball is.
All that for the Lakers to win. I mean, that's all that's going to happen.
Are you a Lakers fan, too?
I like LeBron.
Oh no.
Get that man
out of here.
It's not going to be Kevin Durant, because, I mean, you know how I feel about Kevin Durant. He doesn't have any valid rings, and he's...
All of this is coming back to me now.
Just like Dan Marino. And just like Joe Burrow, who choked in the Super Bowl.
Well, we got to go to break.
We only care about rings. Matthew Stafford, first ballot Hall of Famer, has a ring now.
Oh, God.
Seriously, though, me and him were talking about this earlier. My man behind the mic right now, behind the board, Jacob, is a Packers fan. I stand by this. When you're 12th all time And 11th, I think he's 11th in passing touchdowns. Maybe it's completions, but he's top 12 in passing categories, in completions, touchdowns, yards, and he's got a Super Bowl. You are a Hall of Famer.
No, I agree, because he has one. I mean, if it was up to me, I would kick Dan Marino out because Dan Marino doesn't. What has Dan Marino done for me lately?
Has not played. You're messing. Jacob's face. Dude,
he also hasn't won
this
a ring.
Jacob, this is a bit. You don't understand. This is a bit. Levi, we appreciate your time, man.
Anytime. I love to come in and just stir up some chaos.
We'll be back with more of On the Line to wrap up the show when we come back.
Welcome back to On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goetz, Noah Gardner here with you. The final segment of the Thursday edition of the show. We just had Levi Fitzwater in to do his weekly segment of Playing the Lines with Levi Fitzwater. If you've missed any of the show up to this point, just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. We have a few more minutes before we get out of here, so if anybody wants to have a last-minute phone call, tell us what's on your mind. Call us here on the line, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. But we're going to end tonight, or end the show, with what's on TV tonight.
Hey everybody, it's Noah Gardner with What's On Tonight. The 2022 Winter Olympics continue on NBC from 7 to 10:30 with freestyle skiing, speed skating, figure skating, and more. The first semifinals of Jeopardy! National College Championship is on ABC at 7. A new episode of BattleBots is on Discovery at 7 as well. Movie selection for tonight, The Magnificent 7, is on Paramount at 6. In live sports, let's take a look at the college basketball schedule. 6 p.m. time slot, Iowa hosts Michigan on ESPN. Wichita State is at Cincinnati on ESPN2, and Austin Peay is at number 21 Murray State on ESPNU. 8 p.m. time slot, Oregon heads to Arizona State on ESPN, while number 14 Houston hosts UCF on ESPN2. Wrapping up the night on FS1 at 10, Washington State is at number 13 UCLA. It's the final day of games in the NBA before the All-Star break, so we've got one game on TNT. At 7:30, it's the Philadelphia 76ers at the Milwaukee Bucks. I'm Noah Gardner, and that's what's on TV tonight.
Back on the line, Noah Gardner, Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Tell everybody what you were just telling me about Aaron Rodgers. Is that confirmed?
Yeah, so ESPN I just got an update from ESPN that Tom Clements, here's the update. It says Tom Clements, one of the coaches Aaron Rodgers credited for development, to be added to the staff as a QB coach. So that's a good sign as a Packers fan myself. That's a good sign that Rodgers, at least that the Packers are doing everything that they can to make sure he stays in Green Bay. Now, whether he stays or not, nobody in this world knows. He just broke up with his fiance yesterday. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah.
Who's his fiance?
Erica would kill me. I don't know who it is. My girlfriend would be so mad that I don't know who it is. But, yeah, Trevor, what's her name?
He's getting on it.
Need to get that
man on mic.
Apparently he got cold feet or something and decided he wanted to focus on his football career.
Was it turf toe? Didn't he get wedding turf toe?
Could have been.
That was what he was dealing with this year. That was the injury that hit. That's why that was a joke. Who is it? Her name is Shailene Woodley.
Okay.
I have no idea who that is.
I don't know. My girlfriend follows all the famous people. We follow the sports guys. But no, so
she's an actress.
Yeah, she's an actress. She makes a lot of money. But Rodgers apparently He got cold feet, wanted to focus on football. But this update coming in just shows me that the Packers are doing everything they can to make sure Aaron Rodgers stays in Green Bay. But ultimately, it's up to him, man. We'll find out. I hope he does.
We talk about sports here.
Sports.
So how does the breaking up with his fiance coincide with him staying in Green Bay then?
I don't really know.
I stand by my take that professional sports is reality television.
It is.
That it is by far, without a doubt, a soap opera.
The NBA is the worst.
Oh, but it can be entertaining,
well,
right?
Of course it's entertaining.
I think there was a headline on ESPN the other day when I was watching NBA Countdown. They're like, is all the drama for the NBA a good thing? Your thoughts? Because there's drama everywhere.
It's good for the NBA. They love it.
You think it is?
Yeah, they love it.
You don't think people get tired of it?
No,
I pondered it for a moment. Well, I think it drives the ratings up.
It does, because let's be honest, the NBA, the brand of NBA basketball is not to what it should be for professional basketball, but the entertainment side makes up for that and makes the NBA that much entertaining and that much enjoyable. Take somebody like me. I have an NBA team. I'm a Clippers fan, quote unquote, but I'm not like a diehard Clippers fan. But I still follow the NBA hardcore because of its entertainment factor. So, yes, it is a good thing for the NBA.
Keeping up with the Kardashians becomes keeping up with the Hardens.
Ooh.
Or, you know, something like that. Obviously, there's not multiple Hardens.
Keeping up with the Nets.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's been a reality show in itself. I mean, you got Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden on the same team. What could go wrong?
That's it for another edition of On the Line. Noah Gardner, Jacob Guns. We'll be back with you to wrap up the week tomorrow. Have a good evening, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. You know where to find us.